everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. And with me today, I have one of my favorite comic artists. I know a lot of you may not have heard of him. And in my opinion, that's not okay. Because this guy's art is incredible. I have V-Ken Marion on the show. V-Ken, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. And thanks for all those kind words just now.
Man, you know, I'm really glad that you're over at DC now, and I know you're starting to get more eyes on the work. And I constantly come across people on social media that say things like, man, who's this guy? His art is, you know, great. Where has he been? So it's nice to hear that your kind of star is on the rise finally. It's well deserved, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty much it's a dream come true to be working at DC, and I'm coming up on 3 years now there. So I guess I'm about 2.5 years working there. So yeah, it's been pretty awesome.
Great. And we can we'll talk about how that all came about. But for some of our listeners who aren't familiar, haven't had a chance to listen when you've been on the show before, let's dial it back some. Let's turn the Wayback Machine back to when you were a kid. Let us know how you started reading comics, how you discovered them, and maybe what some of your favorite artists and titles were from back in the day.
Well, I mean, I got into superheroes like in general through like the cartoons and the action figures and stuff, and like I guess the Burton movies and the Batman cartoon and all that. My parents would buy me all the action figures, like so. Like I had a very clear understanding of all the characters from kind of like three, you know, like I knew who all the Marvel and DC characters were, like just, but not like much about them. You know what I mean? Like I just knew who they were and what they looked like kind of thing. And it wasn't until, I mean, and then I started dabbling in comics, like in fourth grade to like eighth grade, I got into different characters. Like I got into Silver Surfer and like X-Men and Spider-Man and Green Lantern and Flash. And I kind of get my toe in, like every, like I'd get into it for a couple months and then kind of drift away and then get back into it and drift away kind of thing, you know? When I really got into it, like a lot was when I was in high school when, Batman Hush was coming out, and I had never, like, I had known of Jim Lee from X-Men, like as in terms of like, I knew what his art was, but I didn't know of him. You know what I mean? Cause I was so young and that stuff was coming out. I was like four or five when X-Men number one hit. So I recognized the style, but then when Wizard magazine was making like a big deal about, oh, Jim Lee coming on Batman, I was like, oh, this looks like that X-Men stuff when I was a kid. And this looks really cool. And like, that's what kind of snowballed the whole getting to know who artists were, like recognizing based on the name. So they're right off the bat, like I got really into certain styles and guys that really spoke to me, like Jim Lee and Michael Turner were the big ones. But also, you know, like the Huber brothers and Mark Silvestri and David Finch and all those guys, like around that time, like around 2002, 2003, like all those guys are really starting to pop those like detailed, like I would consider them the definition of like what comic book artists to me, that like American style, but infused with like anime a little bit, kind of like that 90s kind of art, like that just speaks to me a lot. So that's kind of what really snowballed the whole thing.
So you said that happened in high school. So at that point, did you already know that you wanted to be a comic artist?
Well, that's kind of what made me want to be a comic artist. Before high school, like, I had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to be a skateboarder or a basketball player, you know, like ridiculous stuff, you know. But I always liked drawing, and I was always into, like, I always drew, like, video game characters that I like Zelda and Dragon Ball Z and Gundam Wing. Like, I was always drawing, like, that. I was always into that stuff. And so when I, like I said, when I recognized that Jim Lee was a guy who drew, and then I noticed these are guys who draw, like, cause I was always told growing up from teachers that don't draw Batman, don't draw Spider-Man, don't draw the Flash. Like these are characters that exist already. You can't make money doing that. And then when I realized, it was very discouraging to me, you know, like, but then when I realized that no, people actually do make a living doing this, I was like, oh wait, this is like perfect. Cause it's getting to draw characters that I love. And you know, it's like a job. You know what I mean? Like, so this is kind of where that came from.
So did you go to like an art high school? Because I know you're from New York originally, right? Is that right?
I'm from like a small town in New York State, so not the city. And I went to like a normal public high school, but they had a pretty decent art program. Like it was way better than I would say 95% of like high schools, like art programs. Like we had sculpture and we had painting and we had fabrics, like looms. Like I didn't take that class, but it was available. Like it was a very, very, very good art department that we had. So I took all like painting, drawing, I took a media class, a video class. I took AP art, advanced placement art. So I had a very art-centric high school experience. And then I went to college for art. And then went to Pratt Institute.
Wow, that's really cool. So are some of the art teachers that you had still there?
Yeah, they're actually, I want to say almost all of them are still. I think two of them had retired by now, but the rest of them are all still there.
Did they like brag on you to their students, like, hey, we had V. Ken Marion and he's a comic artist now and draws Green Lantern? And
I don't know. I mean, I went back to visit a couple of years ago to talk to their class. It was long, like maybe 2013 or so. I haven't been back since, so I don't know if they talk about me at all, but I don't know. I mean, I know my mom still works. She's a teacher and she still works at the school, so she talks to them a lot.
Oh, they're talking about it for sure then. That's awesome. Do you think that taking those other kind of classes, and do you feel like that helped you with like your comic art as far as like body form and the way things, you know, come across visually on the page?
Yes. I do think that being super well, and not only in high school, but at Pratt as well, the freshman year at Pratt, everyone has to take a foundation year for the whole first year, which is painting, drawing, sculpting, and video. So I think all of that broad foundation definitely instilled in me a sense of like form with like anatomy, and then also with storytelling, like how characters move. And like I pride myself on making sure that my characters look like they're moving in an action, because with my animation background, like that was really important with like, you know, storyboarding and stuff. So I think all of it kind of builds on each other, and it's not like one specific thing. Like at college, we also had a lot of life drawing, and I think that really helped with just understanding like how like people move, you know what I mean? Like how arms move and work with the elbows, work with the torso, and work how when you twist and all that.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes artists, when they're breaking in, that they can look at something like a Jim Lee pinup or a Jim Lee cover. Oh, I love that. That's great. And they start just drawing a bunch of pinups. They start drawing it, and they take their portfolio with them when they go to shows and everything, and they're showing them around. There's no sequentials in there, right? And comics is a sequential medium, right? You're telling stories with sequential art. And I think that, I mean, yes, there are artists that make a living doing just covers, like, you know, Mark Brooks and, you know, Stanley, Art Germ and, you know, things like that. But you have to kind of pay your dues before you get those kind of gigs, so to speak. I mean, you may do a cover here or there, but I think that some of the guys, they don't realize that what you need to do if you really want to do this is put in the foundational work, like learn anatomy, totally. Learn storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, all those, the cover artists you said, like all those guys like worked as interior guys first, you know? I mean, I'm not sure if Art Germ did, but like he's like a digital painter. That's like a completely different like thing, you know what I mean? Like the very specific thing. Like most of these guys, when you think of cover art, like J. Scott Campbell or these guys who are like really great cover artists, they for years were doing interiors, you know? So
yeah, and you mentioned
it's just part of the process.
Yeah, and you mentioned Pratt, so that's the college you went to, obviously an art college. So you're in high school, you realize, hey, this is a real career. I can become a comic artist. It's, you know, what I want to do. Inspired by, you know, a lot of those guys you mentioned, Michael Turner and Jim Lee. I know, you know, we've talked before how they're probably your two biggest influences.
Totally.
And so at some point in high school, you decided, okay, I'm going to go to an art college.
Yeah, it was just I was really lucky because my parents were always very supportive of it. And they kind of, like, before I knew what I wanted to do growing up, they just always assumed, oh, you're going to be an artist kind of thing. And that was so nebulous to me. Like, I always thought of artists as, like, Van Gogh, like, guys who were, like, destitute and cutting off their own ear and stuff, and just painters that didn't make money, you know? So when I discovered that you could be an artist doing like comic books or storyboards or video games or movies. You know what I mean? Like it kind of opened this whole like world to me of like, oh, you can be an artist and not just paint flowers. You know, you can like draw stuff that you like, you know what I mean? So, it kind of just like opened that world to me. And, they were very supportive, like, knowing that I was going to go to an art college, and they helped me, apply to a bunch of them and stuff. So I was very lucky in that regard.
So you go to art college, you still have this dream of being a comic artist. How did that evolve or change, or did you ever have doubts while you were going through the 4 years of art school? Like maybe it's tougher to break in, and were you trying to make contacts? Like, were you going to conventions even then?
Oh yeah. So I was actually an animation major in college because they didn't have comic books. They had illustration and animation. And between the two of them, I figured illustration, the department at the time, I'm not sure what it is now, but at the time it was very like editorial based illustration. So they were preparing you to like paint illustrations for like magazine articles and, right, you know, like stuff like that, like more high concept, one image kind of things. And to me, it didn't lean at all toward comic books. Like some of the teachers actually at the time looked down on it a little bit. So to me, animation was way more commercial. It was more sequential. It was more you got more dynamics with it. You know what I mean? Like in terms of character movement and everything. And I also figured that at the end of the day, if comics didn't work, animation is a much more lucrative field to go into than illustration. So if the whole comic dream failed, I could always, you know, had the skills to try to be a storyboard artist or, you know, an animator or something like that along those lines, you know? So that was what made me take animation. And to get back to your question, yeah, no, I never wavered in that I wanted to draw comics when I was there, like, because it was just always the stuff that spoke to me. And it was also, I never questioned it, you know? Like, it was just, I got more and more into it. I started buying more comics, like, crazy. I had a teacher at Pratt who really inspired me a lot. He was in the illustration department, and he was the one teacher who bought comic book stuff. And he tells me now that I was like the only kid he's had in like decades who was like so focused on it in like a mainstream way. Like I was like all of like, so a lot of the kids that I went to school with, they were very much they wanted to tell like personal stories of comics or about like slice of life kind of books or, you know, just all that like kind of off the beaten path sort of like way of doing things.
Yep.
And I was like the only guy who was like, I was doing like Flash samples and Batman samples and like, you know, like Spider-Man. And like, I was doing very mainstream. That's the kind of artist I wanted to be, was like a big time superhero artist. So, that my teacher really helped me along that way. Cause I guess for him, it was like different to see someone with that kind of mentality, and he used to be an artist in Marvel, so it all kind of fun again. He's still like one of my biggest mentors. So,
oh, that's awesome. Well, being that Pratt's in New York City, did that help? Were you able to make any kind of networking connections and start meeting some people that were in the industry?
So I would, upon my teacher's suggestion, his name was Floyd Hughes. He's a fantastic artist himself, and he told me to go to New York Comic Con. So the first one I went to was the second year they had it. And there wasn't even that big of a like crowd. It was like only half the Javits Center. And like, I got to meet Jim Lee and Alex Ross. And like, it wasn't like, it was crazy. Like I got to, you know, just kind of like gig in the line. Like I didn't realize at the time what a blessing it was to not have that many people like this. So like, I got to show my portfolio to like almost every company there, you know. It was cool and get feedback. And I just started going back every year, and every year, you know, it got more and more intense and more kind of difficult to do that. But, I was persistent with it, you know, and at the time I also, had an internship at DC Comics working in their creative services department. Yeah. For 2 years I was there, two semesters.
Was that the first time that you met Jim Lee at New York Comic Con?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah. I have a picture with him. See, I'm wearing my Pratt t-shirt and I'm like super young looking. And, I was there, both my parents came with me. So it was like, he made the comment, he's like, oh, it's a family event, you know? So my mom took my picture with him, and like, it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Now, when you started,
he doesn't remember that. I can guarantee you, he doesn't remember that at all.
I was gonna ask you that. You might be surprised. When you started working at DC recently, did you get a chance? Have you reconnected with him since?
I actually haven't face to face. No. So I'm, you know, I don't really do a lot of conventions.
Right.
So and especially on the West Coast, you don't really have time to go to the West Coast that much. So I have not really had the chance to talk to him one on one.
Well, I think he's going to be at New York Comic Con again this year. So if you're going, you'll have to try to bring the pickup, because he puts up on his Twitter all the time. He'll be like, "Oh, look, here's where I met this person the first time. Here's meeting this person 20 years later." He loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm waiting to post that until I you know, connect them again, you know.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. The other thing that he does that's really awesome, I don't know if you know this, he streams on Twitch.
Yeah, I've seen it on Instagram. I'm not super deep in social media, like, cause I just don't have time. Like, I if I went down that rabbit hole, I would never hit my deadlines. I'm kind of not like a hermit, but I'm very like, I just kind of focus on my own work, trying to get stuff done. So like, I've seen like the postings he does, but I've never actually been in a Twitch room watching, you know?
Yeah. I know there's some other artists that, go head in there sometimes, like Bernard Chang recently has been hanging out in his Twitch and everything. And I just think it's like, I'm not an artist. I have some artistic ability. I can like look at an image and kind of, you know, copy it freehand and it looks pretty close, but I'm painfully slow. I'm painfully slow. And I just don't have like, I just never nurtured that, you know, when I was growing up, it just wasn't where my interests lie. But I think that based on a lot of the people that watch the Twitch, they're super into art and they're trying to, you know, break in themselves or get better, and they learn a lot. I mean, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I, like if I dial it back to when I was, like, 14, you know, and Hush is coming out, like, I spent that whole summer just basically copying Jim Lee's cover. Like, I was probably in my parents' house somewhere. Like, I did the cover where Batman's, like, digging the grave for, like, it was, I think it was the second class issue of Hush, where he's, like, kneeling with, like, a grave, and he's, like, digging that out, you know, and, like, I literally copied every cover that Jim Lee did, not traced it, but, like, looked at it and tried to, like, recreate it, you know, and I did the splash page where Batman's punching Superman. Like, I got like super into that like a whole summer, and I just started like copying. Like, he's such a good person to learn from in that sense. You know what I mean? In terms of like just dynamic, like he's so dynamic because he always puts a foreground, middle ground, background to all of his work. And I think since I was so young doing that, it kind of instilled it really early in my head. Like just how bodies like twist when they fight, and you know, just making those dynamics work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's exactly what I see when he draws in his Twitch channel. So that's cool. Well, let's get back to your evolution as an artist, the secret origin of V. Ken Marion here. So you're in college, you never give up the dream to be a comic artist. Then you graduate, and now you're faced with the prospect of, okay, now I actually have to get a job, and you know that you can't just go down to the corner market and pick up a comic book gig. So what happened then? I think you mentioned you went into animation for a little while. Are you still trying to break in? Is that what happened?
Yeah. So I just started doing sample pages, you know, just, just working like crazy, like doing sample pages. And then I found some like creator owned kind of gigs, like on like the message boards and stuff. And so I was balancing it, doing that. And I had like a part-time job on the weekend to help meet ends meet, you know, and I started getting work at like smaller companies, and I would, but wasn't really making money, you know, and I was using that work to just kind of make jumps like throughout the years, you know, like, so I did like a couple of those. I did like Logan's Run and Adam West at Blue Water, which is like my first thing, you know, and like that they didn't really pay me at all, but like I got like work experience, and then I used that to take those pages, and I would just be constantly emailing people. And eventually I got like a little bit of a break at Xenoscope, and I got to do a couple issues there. And while I was doing that, I got an email out of the blue from Boom, who I must have, I don't really know how they got my stuff, but I think it was just from always like taken stuff around, and someone that I must have shown something to at a con one time, I took it to Boo, or who knows how it happened, but they emailed me and asked me to work on this book they had called Extermination, which is like a little 8-issue miniseries. And that I feel like was my first like kind of like big break, because they paid me like regularly, and it was like consistent work. And then those pages I immediately took, because and throughout all this time I was always showing my stuff to Aspen Comics, because they were besides Marvel and DC, they were the company I always wanted to work with because of Michael Turner. And I loved their characters and like Fathom and Soulfire. And I wanted to work with them so bad. So when I had that Extermination gig, I met up with Frank at New York that year, and I showed him the pages, and he was like, I think you finally might be ready to jump in, you know, like with us. And that's when I got, my first gig with them, which was, it was supposed to be Soulfire, but Soulfire wasn't coming out for like 9 months when they hired me. So like they gave me that Fathom miniseries, Elite Saga. So that was my first work with Aspen. And that was really like the turning point, I feel like, in my career, which was like, like big characters, like recognizable property, like putting my stamp on it, but like at the same time trying to honor what Michael Turner did. Like that was like, actually the beginning, like the true beginning of like the journey, you know, in many ways.
Right. Now, so you say, you know, you did some Blue Water work, and obviously, you know, it's a way to get some sequentials done and have more pages to go and show around. But yeah, I kind of agree with you that Extermination at Boom was kind of the first, that's the first time I remember, you know, seeing your name. But when I go
back, oh wow, I didn't know you read that, because it wasn't like a super, I don't think it was a really big selling title, but it was written by Simon Spurrier, so that it definitely like had some heat to it, because he's a pretty big writer, you know.
But what's interesting to me, like, I didn't realize that was you, because, well, I mean, when I go back now knowing it's you, then I can see it. But I feel like you, even going from Extermination to when you started doing some work at Aspen, was when you really jumped on my radar, because, you know, I'm such an Aspen fan as well. I feel like there's a bit of an evolution between your stuff from Extermination to the Aspen stuff. Do you feel like that too? I mean, do you go back and look at the Extermination stuff and be like, oh, wow, I'm so much better now?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully every project there's like, you know, a bit of a jump forward, you know, so it's not that in some ways to be expected, but I feel like Extermination and everything I was doing before that, like, you know, in college and the Logan's run and Adam West, the Wednesday and Scope, like, I felt like a lot of it was like trying to draw as though there were like I would see artists that I like Greg Capullo or Kath Rockford or those guys, and like I would try to like incorporate a lot, like consciously try to like incorporate things from them, right? But the Aspen stuff was like more so, that was when I was like, you know what, I'm working at Aspen, Michael Stern's always been one of my biggest influences, I'm just gonna go back to drawing like how I want to draw, you know. And that the early Fathom stuff I did, and even Soulfire to a degree, was really 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 heavily influenced by Mike, because I kept looking back at what he had done in his volumes to like draw armor and draw, you know, like tech and draw the backgrounds and the environments. And so a lot of his art kind of bled into mine. So I kind of feel like I was drawing a lot like Michael Turner during those days. But since then, I've kind of, you know, like you evolve and you change. And I still feel like I've got a pretty heavy Michael Turner influence in my work, but it's definitely like, you know, it's just changed over time, you know?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I love Michael Turner, obviously. My daughter's name is Aspen, and he's my, you know, favorite comic artist of all time. But, and I, you know, obviously the influence is there. I can see the Jim Lee influence. But I think on your more recent DC work, which has been great, if there's like one word I could use to describe the difference between you and Mike, is your style's a little softer. Mike's got a very kind of angular and like, I feel like a lot of, you know, points, his, you know, line work is so fine. And I feel like yours has kind of softened up a little bit.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I'm getting a little more round, a little more, you know, it's a lot of it has to do with, like deadline stuff too, just cause like, I don't really have time to, and I feel like a lot of artists, kind of what happens is that their natural kind of just style takes over, because the nature of the business is you don't really have time to think about like every, like, you know what I mean? Just cause like with Aspen, the deadlines were a lot less intense. So it wasn't like I could, if I didn't like the way a face looked, I could just completely erase it and redraw it from scratch kind of thing.
Right.
But when when the deadlines are super tight, like you kind of just have to naturally go with what you want. You know what I mean? And your natural style just sort of takes over.
Yeah, that leads into an interesting point because you still work traditionally, you know, pencil and paper, which I love the fact that you do that. But I know a lot of artists have made that change. Artists I thought never would, and artists I've talked to who say they thought they never would, but then there just becomes like a quality of life thing where they want to draw a monthly book, and switching over to digital allows them to, oh, I don't like the way the face looks. It's easy, you know, a lot easier to, you know, erase it digitally or part digitally, you know, and make changes. Any thought to doing that, or are you just going to always stick to pencil and paper?
I find that funny because the prospect of switching to digital to me would make it take way longer for me to draw a page.
Yeah, there is.
It boggles my mind when people say it's faster for them. Maybe they just know the secrets and the shortcuts to the programs. But for me, like, I would just be constantly zooming in and like noodling away at these details that when you zoom out are like, you know, a quarter of an inch of the page. Like, so for me, it's actually faster to draw traditionally. Like, I'm so used to it, and I like having the original art, and I like working with inkers too, you know, and it's just, there's something old school and fun about it to me. Whereas like, okay, so the job can be stressful, right? Cause you got so much work to do in a little amount of time and everything. And drawing traditionally in some way still makes me harken back to when I was a kid, just like drawing with my crayons, like just drawing like, oh, I'm going to have fun drawing the Flash or Captain America, or, you know what I mean? And I feel like if I went the digital route, it would almost make it more clinical and less fun. Right. You know what I mean? It would become like one more step removed from the joy I had as a kid working on it. So that's another reason I don't lightbox or do any of those things that a lot of artists do. Like, I know a lot of artists lightbox their layouts. Like, they'll do tiny thumbnails and blow them up and lightbox them. I do thumbnails, but I just kind of eyeball them onto the page. Like, I don't lightbox because when I start adding all these like technical kind of steps to it, it one makes it more time consuming and two just makes it less enjoyable, you know? So that's my traditional kind of speech about like working traditionally.
No, I mean, you're saying you're telling me a lot of things that I've heard from other artists. I mean, yeah, there's the learning curve, and I've talked to some artists that say like, when they switched over to digital, you know, it took them like 6 months before they really felt comfortable and that their digital stuff was as good or on the way to being as good as their regular stuff. And I've also heard artists say, yeah, so I went digital. And what I found was I'd spend a day on, you know, like a 2-inch square of the page on doing like details on a building in the background because I could zoom in and I could do that. And it's such a waste that no one's going to notice. There's those traps to fall into. So I totally understand. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, some guys are so good at it. They're like Jason Sabach, I think, draws digitally, and he blows my mind. Because like usually when guys draw digitally, you can tell there's like it's usually a little less detailed, it's usually smoother. But his work looks like it's traditional. Like it blows my mind how detailed he gets it, and like how slick and sharp. You know, like he's really one of the best guys working right now. He's incredible.
Yeah, I feel like Mitch Gerrits is kind of that way too. His stuff. Man, I don't understand. It does not look, because you're right. I mean, usually digital just has that like smoother quality, you know, it doesn't, the way I'd put it, it doesn't quite have the texture that traditional work has.
Yeah. 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 But you're right. Mitch is another one of those guys who like, he really makes it work for him, like in a really distinct way, you know, like, so those, that's always super impressive to me. Like when people can, did you like that kind of crazy stuff with digital?
Yeah, I guess it all just comes down to, you know, putting the time in, I suppose. Well, let's talk about taking it to the next level. So you're at Aspen, you're getting, you know, work there. I think you probably did the Journey miniseries, the Volume 2 Journey with JT Krull. And then that was kind of the doorway to DC. Is that right?
Yeah, I kind of, again, talking about leaps, like, I think I made a huge artistic leap on Journey. Because again, it was like, it wasn't something that Mike had worked on, Michael Turner. So I didn't feel the need to, you know, reference a lot with him, you know? So that was really where I kind of made, I feel like my jump toward what my style has become now, you know?
Yeah.
The way I started shading a lot more. And I, cause that was something, if you look back on Fathom Soulfire, I didn't spot any blacks because Mike didn't spot any blacks. And I knew that they were coloring off my pencils. So, like, to me, in my head, it was like, well, if they're coloring off the pencils, they shouldn't spot blacks because it's going to look grainy, you know? But with Journey, I was like, ah, I don't care. Let it look grainy. Like, I'm just going to start spotting blacks because I think it makes, it adds, like, shading and texture a lot. So I feel like that's where a big leap forward came. And I had such a great time working with JC. And we had worked for, I guess, for, like, 3 years straight at Aspen. So that was kind of where the, you know, he knew, like, I was a huge DC fan. And he had that idea for Bloodlines. And we just kind of, we pitched it to them and it kind of all came together, which was awesome. You know, and I'm so grateful for JC for taking me along in that ride to do Bloodlines with them.
Yeah, that Journey work, man, that's probably the favorite thing for me that you've done. I mean, that, just because that world that you got to play in, you know, it was just incredible. Love that work. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that was like definitely one of the most fun things I ever got to work on because it was so just like imagination based. You know what I mean? Like it was just, I always said this in interviews before, but it was like, for me, it was like playing with Legos when I was a kid, like the, you know, the knights and the pirate Legos and just kind of like making up stuff. You know what I mean? Like just like all that like classic iconic fantasy type, like storybook tropes of like knights and pirates and castles and like Robin Hood-esque kind of like building, like you like all that just kind of that storybook fantasy was just come to life in comics. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the airships and yeah, so good. So good. So yeah, so you get your foot in the door, you know, JT and, you know, you take this idea of Bloodlines over to DC, do the 6-issue. And then what? They liked it. They liked your work. They saw that you could hit deadlines and then they started offering you when another artist needed a break.
So I'm not entirely sure how it happened internally, but yeah, I grabbed the deadlines and I just kind of emailed everyone and it was like, hey, I really loved working with you guys and I love the DC characters. Like if you guys, you know, want me, like I'd like to keep working on with stuff with you. And, I got picked up, by the Superman and the Green Lantern and Superman off the time was one group. So that's where they kind of snatched me up there and first thing after was I did this there's like a holiday book, a DC Rebirth holiday special. And I did, I think it was an 8-page story of Simon and Jessica, like the Green Lanterns. And that was the first thing I did after Bloodlines. And then right after that, they put me into Hal Jordan. It was a 1-issue for Hal Jordan on issue 13. And then it kind of snowballed into the next arc. And then it just kind of all went from there, you know?
Yeah. And you've done some Teen Titans work and
Titans. I got to do 1 issue of Titans, which is cool. After Hal Jordan, like, because me and Brett Booth are friends and Andrew Dahlhaus, Norm Ratman, like, I know those guys pretty well. And, they know how much I love Wally West. And Brett, I think, needed a break. And, and I know the editor on that book. So I got to do 1 issue, which is so much fun. Like, I still have one of those pages of Wally. Like, I'm never going to sell it because Norm inked it. And, like, yeah, that was a great time.
That's awesome too. And then Trinity, right? I mean, Francis Manapole was both writing and drawing that book and he probably was falling a little behind as well. So you did you do more than one of Trinity or was it a...
Yeah, Trinity, I got to do the full arc. Francis had left the book. When we came on, Francis had wrapped up his run and okay. Rob Williams took over writing it for that arc. And it was, it was a fun, like magical, I got to do a 5-issue arc on it. It was like a fun magic, like the Dark Trinity, like, and they're fighting like Cersei and Ra's al Ghul and then Red Hood and the Outlaws were in it. So it was a trinity of trinities that I got to draw, which is a lot of fun.
So when you were offered that one, like, okay, so we have this Trinity title. Maybe you've heard of it. It's Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Was that like a holy crap moment? Like I'm about to draw Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was so much fun because it was like, you know, the big three, you know, and Superman, I've been hankering to draw Superman for a really long time. So like I get to draw him, and I really want to go back to those characters at some point to draw Batman and Superman again, because I feel like I'm not done saying what I want to say with them. You know, like I feel like there's still things I want to tweak and adjust, and you know, like get to define my look for those characters. You know, that was a really fun time for sure.
Most of your work, you know, you mentioned Green Lanterns and Hal Jordan. Most of your work has been in that corner, like the kind of the Green Lantern corner of the universe. What's your favorite part about working in that corner?
Well, I mean, Green Lantern is probably my second favorite character, like in all of comics. Like my first is Flash, and second is Green Lantern, and I've loved that character since I was a kid. Like at first it was Kyle Rayner, who I really like. And then when I was in high school, like Jeff John, like I was like 14 or 15 when the Green Lantern Rebirth came out. And to me, that's like a perfect comic book age to like really like get into stuff. And so Hal Jordan became like one of my all time favorite characters because of that. And there's something deeper to Green Lantern. Like I think that one, they've got great visual design, right? Like their costumes look great. Like the green, black and white, such a cool like look have. But there's this really cool idea to me of what a Green Lantern means and represents. So like they say that the ring is the most powerful weapon in the universe, right? But the ring, when you think about it, is a tool for your willpower. And what that means is you are the most powerful weapon in the universe. You know what I mean? Like there's this kind of message of like you can do anything you want and you can accomplish anything as long as you have the willpower to make it happen. And it's a really great symbolism kind of going on with that story that I really like those characters and what they represent and like the light and the darkness and like everything that comes with it. It's just such an iconic heroic story that's the kind of stuff I love, you know?
That's so awesome too, because a lot of times I'll ask artists, oh, what do you like? Oh, I like the fact that I draw this or I draw that. You're such a comic book guy that it's like what's behind the characters that inspires you and comes through in your work, and that's one of the things I love about you, Ken. It's like you're one of us. You're one of the
fan. Totally.
That's awesome. So you're not on a regular monthly gig, but is that still what you aspire to at DC? You want to get on a regular monthly book and just do a long run on something, or do you like being able to kind of hop around and do different stuff and keep it like changing in variety?
I mean, I would love to get on a regular monthly gig, specifically either Flash or Hal Jordan. Like that's like I want to draw those characters for a long time. Like I run like on those. But just the nature of the business right now, it seems that it's kind of hard for that just because a lot of these books ship twice a month and you can't really have a continuous kind of like 1 to 50 kind of run anymore. But there's still the opportunity to like be like the regular guy on a book, you know, which I definitely want, to work on like any of these characters for like a long period of time for sure.
Well, I feel like with the quality of your work, and I know how diligent you are, I feel like you've got a really good relationship with DC, and it seems like I'm seeing your name more and more often there. So I feel like that's going to be coming.
Thank you. You know, they've been keeping me super busy. I in 2017, I did 10 issues. Like, I completed 10 complete issues in 2017, which I was, like, pretty proud of because I didn't blow any deadlines on it. And that's a lot of pages for 1 year, you know? And then in this year, I've got a bunch done down. I think I've got, I don't know off the top of my head, but I've never had a break in work. Like it's been one thing after another, which I've been very grateful for, you know?
Yeah. I mean, 10 issues in a year, that is a regular gig when you think about it. That's pretty much what a regular, you know, sometimes even more than a regular gig.
Yeah. Yeah. But it just wasn't on the same book, you know? Right, I am a monthly artist. Like I do a book every month. It's just not because the book ships twice a month, you know? So it's like, they hop you around from Trinity was cool because Trinity only shipped once a month. So that's how I could do 5 issues in a row.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't checked that out. I mean, I have the issues. I just haven't actually read them yet. I definitely need to go and check that out. Let's talk about cover work versus interiors, because you have done a few books where it's just been the cover, right?
Yeah, I'm just on the cover?
Yeah. Has there been any of the? I thought I saw a few.
Not at DC. I do some cover work for Aspen and Dynamite. I did a cover for, and the book I'm working on right now at DC, I did the covers for. But yeah, I haven't done a ton of covers at DC yet, but I want to. That's definitely something I want to get into, you know?
Yeah, because the reason I ask is I've been picking up Journey Volume 3 because, you know, JT, and it's I just love the story and the characters. But I always order your variant because it reminds me of, I mean, I love that you're at DC, but I do miss you on Journey.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No, I'm so happy that they asked me to do the variants for Journey Volume 3 because Journey, even though I didn't create Aura in that world, you know, Paolo Pasolino was the one who really created the initial concept of it. I feel like in our arc, I put like such a heavy stamp on it that I still feel like a form of like, oh, it's like my character too, you know, like, even though like I wasn't the one who completely originated it. So it was so cool to get in there, you know, and like get to continue like work with that. Like in a perfect world, I'll be able to do Journey covers as long as they publish the book, you know?
Yeah. And we had JT on, I guess it's been a little over a month ago when Volume 3 first started coming out, and we kind of recapped everything. He kind of said the same thing. You know, he's like, man, I really feel like that second volume with V-Ken is where it really, the world really kind of blossomed. So he feels the same way. And yeah, I do too. It's incredible work.
That's awesome here. I love JC.
Yeah, he's great.
I'll work him again really soon.
When we talk about cover work versus interiors, though, I've heard some artists say cover work, you're still trying to tell a story, but it's all in one image rather than sequentials and worrying about kind of the acting of the characters and that, you know, making sure that it makes sense from the story flow from panel to panel. Is that the way that you approach it as well? Or do you just say, I just want this to look cool?
Okay. So it really depends on what the editorial direction is, you know, because there's two different ways of making comics with covers. There's like the story based ones where it's like giving you a little preview of what's in there and hopefully enticing you like with some sort of like drama or action. And then there's the ones that are like the iconic shots of the characters. Now, it really depends on what the editors want, but to me, I'm going to use myself as an example here. When I was a kid, when I was getting into comics, right? Like before I was in high school, I'm saying like when I would go to the comic book store when I was like young with my dad and like before I knew Jim Lee and when I did that, right? I would always go to the back issues, right? And flip through and pick the covers and buy the comics that had the most iconic shot of the character. Like to me, if there was a cover where like the hero was in danger, I was like, I don't want this. I want Captain America looking super heroic, standing there with a flag behind him. Like, I don't want him being like choked by the Red Skull. You know what I mean? Like, I want like Flash looking ultra heroic with the lightning around him. Like, I don't really want like him fighting Gorilla Grodd. Like, because my thing when I was a kid was, when I open this comic, they might not have a cool shot in the book, but if I can get like a really cool classic iconic shot of them on the cover, like that's the one I want. So that's just my mentality with it. But like, I know editorial direction, sometimes they want the more like story-based covers, but in my heart of hearts, like to me, like the really dynamic poster grade kind of covers are the ones that as a fan, I kind of gravitate to. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Totally makes sense. It's so funny too, because you're the exact opposite of me. I think when I was a kid, and I'd go and I'd look sometimes if it was a really amazing cover, it would grab me. But otherwise, I was kind of looking to the cover to like, okay, what's the story about? Am I going to like the story? So that's so interesting. the dip, right? Like, right? Like you look at things with an artistic eye, and I'm looking at it more from like the storyteller's perspective. That's cool.
It's funny. Yeah, well, it's like, just personally, I was like, I don't want to see the hero not being awesome on the cover. Like, I don't want him getting beat up. I want to see him, like, being triumphant. Like, it was just kind of the opposite. Like,
well, no, it makes total sense. It makes total sense. Like, when you're saying, well, there might not be some big splash page where they're looking, you know, super awesome inside, but if you get that on the cover, then at least you know you get one, right? That makes total sense to me. I just never thought of it before. That's cool. Let's talk a little bit about future plans. I mean, obviously, you know, you mentioned and you're still really at the beginning of your career. But I picked you as best new talent of 2017 for a reason, because I think you're amazing and I think more people are going to start to recognize your name. So I know you still have things that you want to accomplish at DC, but looking down the road, I mean, creator owned? Any aspirations to write? I know you're still hoping for a long run on Flash. What are some of the goals you still have out there for yourself?
Oh, so I totally have aspirations to write, like to write my own stuff. Like I want to do that so badly. Like I have so many ideas for just like characters, like in the DC and Marvel world. Like I have a lot of stories that I would love to tell, like where I write and draw it myself. But yeah, I've got some creator-owned characters too that at some point I would love to pull out at Image or something like that. You know, I definitely have the desire to write, and that's kind of more of a recent thing actually. Over the last few years, I was like, you know, like because I never thought of myself that I would be someone that would want that, but it's like, you know, there's so many cool stories that I feel like that I've made up when I was a kid. You know, like just playing in the backyard with my friends or like playing with like action figures that I think still hold up in my head, and like a lot of the comics today like are not getting those things that like I thought of. So it's like, you know, I feel like there's an open space there for something, you know.
That'd be awesome. You know, I'll be picking it up and bugging you about it and telling you what I like and don't like, because you know that's just how. All right. Well, I really want to thank you for joining me, Ken. It's always great to chat. I feel like it's been forever since I've seen you. So hopefully I can get out to New York. And even if I don't make it to New York Comic Con, next time I'm in the city, I'll definitely look you up. We'll have to get together for a beer or something.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, it's been a really long time. Because I think that San Diego, that when we met, that was almost 4 years ago.
It's a long time ago.
It was. Yeah, time flies, right?
I know. Don't remind me. My daughter's now six. It's just don't even dance class.
Oh, wow.
gymnastics. You don't even want to go down that path. So anyway, again, I know you got to get back to work. Thanks for taking the time. If any of our listeners want to follow, I know you're not huge into social media, but if they do want to follow along your work, where's the best place to find you online?
Twitter, I'm @VKMarion, and Instagram, I'm VKenMarion, I believe. Just search on Instagram, VKenMarion, and that's where I post probably the most is Instagram. But Facebook, or not Facebook, Twitter a little bit, and Facebook, I've kind of just turned it into like, I don't really post art there anymore. I've been kind of like unfriending people I don't know, and just that's kind of like my personal family kind of thing now. But yeah, for artwork and stuff, just Instagram, Twitter.
Okay, and listeners, I'll put links to both VKen's Twitter and his Instagram in the show notes so you can go and find them there. And don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. All three spots are great places to follow along with new episodes when they're released, as well as all our convention coverage. So once again, thanks to VKen. Congratulations on all your success, dude. You're such a great guy and such a great talent. Couldn't happen to a better person.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And thank you for all the kind words and for having me on and chatting and hanging out. Like, definitely looking forward to meeting up sometime.
Yeah, definitely. So thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you next time.